Technorama, interview with T. Morris, recorded December 5th, 2005. Hey, boys, girls, and those that are binary challenged, we have an exclusive. Well, we've got a first. We've got the author of Podcasting for Dummies, T. Morris, on the line. How are you, T?
I'm fine, and thank you very much. I tell you one thing, though. I feel like the pressure's on because I'm following Adam from Mythbusters. I heard that was y'all's last interview. I freaking love that show, and the fact that you guys had Adam on your show, I'm like, I'm the next interview. Ah, man, I got to make this good.
Well, we had that guy from the Recycle Center, but he didn't know he was on the show.
Gorilla interviewing. I don't think I wrote about that in Podcasting for Dummies, but.
Why are you pointing that hat at me?
This is your first interview for the book, right?
This is my first official interview for this book, yeah. I mean, it's been mentioned in other interviews, but this is the first one where the interviewers have said, we want you to come on the show and talk specifically about Podcasting for Dummies. Oh, yeah, and if we get any other stuff, then that's fine, too. So yeah, this is the official inaugural interview for Podcasting for Dummies, which, let's be fair, I didn't write it all. I co-wrote it.
That's true.
I co-wrote it with this hack of a writer. complete and total hack. But you know, he does put on a pretty half-decent podcast with Michael Menengay called Slice of Sci-Fi. I think they won something for it.
They've got an award similar to the one behind me.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
But now, Evo Terra and I co-wrote this book together, and we didn't kill each other. So that's we both lived to tell the tale about our first For Dummies book, and it was a great experience.
Well, thank you for taking the time to visit us on Technorama.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I'm a promotional whore. I'm okay with that.
Take it where you get it.
Exactly.
Well, you're no rookie to the writing scene. For the listener who hasn't heard about you, give us a little background. How'd you get started? I mean, way back when? This goes back pretty far.
I have some history with Evo. My first fantasy novel, Moravi, The Chronicles of Wraith and Ascana, which I described to people as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon meets Pirates of the Caribbean. That was my first book back in 2002. And the first radio interview I ever did was with Michael R. Menengay and Evo Terra of The Dragon Page. This was way before Slice of Sci-Fi. This was way before Winging It. This was even way before the days of Live. And that was where Evo and I met. I've written three fantasy novels total. I've contributed to two... writer's guides, all with Dragon Moon Press, and you can find more about them at dragonmoonpress.com. And then there's the other release I had this year was called Farscape Forever: Sex, Drugs, and Killer Muppets. That was a really good title. I was a contributor to this. I guess you could call it a collection of essays and looks back on the TV show Farscape, and that was since I'm a raging scaper, this was a dream gig for me, and so I've Podcasting for Dummies is not my first byline, but it's definitely my first For Dummies book, a very different experience, and boy, I had a great time doing it. It was high pressure, but it was fun, high pressure. The people at Wiley were very easy to work with.
They're no dummies.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Although they are getting a little challenged about the companion podcast.
Yeah, right.
I'll give you a quick inside story. Yeah, it did get green-lighted. It did get green-lighted, so we are going to be doing a companion podcast, and I'm not going to say when. I'm just going to say soon.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
They were kicking around ideas on how to do the companion podcast. And one of the ideas was, well, why don't we give a link to T's website and then T can host it? And that's when I had to sit down with the folks at Wiley and go, guys, I got this great book. It's called Podcasting for Dummies. You might have heard of it. And they show you how easy it is to actually host a podcast. Now, if you guys at the For Dummies website are promoting a book about how easy it is to do a podcast. Maybe you should host the podcast that goes with the book. And they're like,
that's right.
You got a good point there. And
let's write Bartending for Dummies, but not sure where we should hold the cocktail party.
Exactly.
You know, I could really see that working for them, because for all the different types of books and stuff that they got, they could do podcast. They could do podcasts till.
In fact, one of the one of their recent titles this past year was Dungeons and Dragons for Dummies, and I thought that would be just an absolute killer companion podcast. Mm-hmm. And there have been some rumblings over it for Dummies that if this is a hit, if the companion podcast to Podcasting for Dummies is a hit, they may consider doing that with other books. And and that's really what that's what I think is really something that still remains sort of untapped for a lot of businesses. I don't think businesses understand or even comprehend the promotional aspect of podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of different promotionals for my books in the past, but none have ever had the staying power or the response that doing a podio book has been for me. And that's, I mean, you know, I'm trying to get my time squared away where I can do it again, where I can do another podio book.
Mm-hmm.
But before I do that, I got to get the new book finished. I have to get my new novel finished, and then I can go on ahead and say, okay, now I'll try to do a podio book. But not before that.
Well, you're talking about Moravi, right?
Well, Moravi was my first podio book.
Okay.
And I basically put Moravi together as a podcast to promote its sequel, Legacy of Moravi. Now, a lot of people have asked me, well, are you going to make Legacy of Moravi into a podcast? Well, the book just came out this summer, so the answer is no.
It's still selling.
Exactly. However, Billy, one of my other books, Billabong Battings and the Case of the Singing Sword, I described that book to people as The Lord of the Rings if Mickey Spillane wrote it. And
I'd like to see that.
It's a spoof. It's a spoof of the old style gangster detective novels, and it's also a spoof of fantasy. And I had a great time writing it. And right now I'm working on the sequel to Billy. Once the sequel to Billy is done, then that would be a good time for me to start up the podcast of Billabong Battings and the Case of the Singing Sword.
Sure.
The trick is finishing the sequel. Because I was actually in rewrites with Legacy when I started the podcast Moravi, and that was a little rough. But what's so cool about this is that, you know, I've actually heard people say, other authors say, well, you got to be kind of an idiot to be giving away your book in audio format for free. Mm-hmm. And not only did I have a spike in my pre-sales for Legacy, but I suddenly had a spike in my sales for Moravi, and Moravi's a three-year-old book.
Yeah, and, wow, that's cool.
And not only was this spike on Amazon.com for Moravi, they were for international sales. You know, people were having it shipped up to Canada, shipped out to the Netherlands. Wow. I was tickled. I was really tickled, yeah. And this is all because of podcasting. So
it's just another way to get exposure. For your work.
When's the movie?
Still waiting on that one.
it's coming out on iTunes as a video podcast.
There you go. Yeah, only if I can get Zhang Zi to come in, but she just did Memoirs of a Geisha, so I don't think she's going to do any independent video cast anytime soon. You know.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, how did you get the idea for Dummies, or did you approach Wiley, or did they approach you? How did that all come about?
That's a story in itself. It was really funny because I was in the middle of podcasting Moravi, and I do have an agent, but not for my fiction work. I have an agent for computer books,
mm-hmm.
And I did write this one computer book that I don't talk about because it was not a very pleasant experience. As Bill O'Reilly will say, we will not speak of this again.
Notepad for Dummies.
Exactly. Yeah, something along those lines. Simple Text for Dummies. turn your computer on for dummies, you know, something like that. Atari for dummies.
Control Alt Delete made easy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, well, one of my my agent said, you know, gave a list of all these different things of what she needed from her authors, and then she put on there, does anyone know anything about this thing called podcasting?
Ding, ding,
I was
ding,
the only
writer.
Yep, and I was the only writer that stepped forward and I said, I'm doing this right now. And she goes, well, great, then I need a proposal from you. I'm like, okay, so I then asked her, I said, well, listen, I don't feel comfortable writing about this by myself. Do you mind if I get someone else involved? And she said, sure. And that's when I called Evo.
What made you think of Evo?
And I will tell you why. Evo is, whenever you're on a panel with Evo and you're talking about podcasting, they should just call it the podcasting panel with Evo and assorted other people that might say something. Because Evo will start talking about podcasting and he will not shut up. He will just go. I mean, he is like the greyhound in the slip, straining up on the start. He jumps out of the box and he just goes solid. And it's poetry. I mean, it's absolute poetry. Evo really knows the technical aspect of things. Now, if either one of you have heard my patio book of Moravi, you'll note that I'm kind of a production geek. Unlike Pocket Independent and Earthcore, which were the other two patio books that were happening at the same time that I was doing Moravi, they kind of kept it simple. In fact, I'll never forget hearing Scott Sigler tell me, dude, you really need to cut back your production. You're just putting too much into it. And I just looked at him and I said, this coming from the heavy metal master of patio books. But in my patio book, I did a lot of production value. I mean, I put in sound effects. I put in original music segues. And I was just going to town. And that's just the actor in me coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew that when it came to production stuff, I was okay. But when it came to the actual technical, like how does the RSS feed work and all the little nitpicky things about enclosures and, you know, where to sign up for directories, I knew Evo was going to be a much better counterpart for that. He was going to be the person that you wanted to talk to about the technical aspect of it. So I got Evo involved, and we wrote the proposal once, and my agent said, you need to rewrite it. So we wrote it again. You need to rewrite it. Third time, you need to rewrite it. And we started to get a little frustrated, so we said, do you have some specs that these people wanted to follow? And she's like, oh, I forgot to send those to you. So the agent sends us the specs, and oh, lo and behold, we open them up, and it says at the very top, for dummies. Well, the phone rings, and Evo's on the phone, and I pick it up, and he goes, did you know? I go, no. Did you know? No. And within hours, we had a spit-polished proposal in the for dummies style.
And, oh, sweet.
The next thing we knew, we were hitting the ground running. And now we've got this brand new for dummies book that I don't mind bragging about. This will be the fourth week that it's been out, and it's already going into second printing.
Woohoo!
So, that's fantastic.
So yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you. We could not be more thrilled. That means we're going to be paying off our advance, which is even better. And now it's just a matter of, okay, the books have been sold. Now people have got to go out and buy them. And we're just hoping that people are still going to want this book and they're going to keep the demand high for it.
Don't touch that click wheel.
You're listening to Junk Chat.
Was there synergy between you and Evo right from the start, or did that develop over time?
Right from the start. it was, well, granted, in the first interview that I did with them 3 years ago, it was kind of standoffish. I mean, they were trying to feel me out, and they were like, who is this guy? He's with a small press, first-time author. Okay, he's got the wide-eyed thing happening. Sure. You've written a book. Very nice, son. Very nice.
Please, well, have a seat.
Yes, thank you. Well, don't call us. And
step and then, forward, Scarecrow!
Well, anyway, so after they read Moravia, after they interviewed me, the Red Marine, they called me up and they said, "You're coming back on the show because we loved this book." And if you've ever met Ivo or heard Ivo on his various podcasts, Ivo is very, very strong when it comes to his opinions. And the fact that Ivo was praising so highly this fantasy novel, and he doesn't read fantasy well, I was tickled about that. Mm-hmm. And even on the second interview, I felt like I was feeling the guys out. Well, then they started calling me at random times because they needed somebody to fill in some extra space. And they said, "Well, we'll call T. We know he can talk a lot."
Do you know it's 3 a.m?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, guys, you know, come on. Leave me alone. This number has been blocked. But then after we started setting up this rapport, I flew out to Phoenix in 2003 for the first time and hung out with them for an entire weekend, and we just clicked. We clicked automatically, and I really dig working with Ivo. I mean, he really is. He's just like me, but he's exactly the opposite of me. All in the same vein. And any chance we get to hang out, I look forward to it.
What about the writing part of it? Was there any did it flow smoothly at first, or were there?
We had our moments because I was gearing up for the premiere of Legacy of Moravia in the summer,
mm-hmm.
and Ivo was basically juggling his podcast, and we were both trying to make time for the Podcasting for Dummies book, all the while. Ivo and I both have our day jobs, so there was a lot happening all at once, and there were times where I would cover for Ivo, Ivo would cover for me, and I won't, you know, I even told Wiley about this, that first computer book that I wrote, I was so badly burned by it that I was not trusting Wiley for the longest time, and I was very, very suspicious of Wiley. Now, the first computer book I wrote wasn't with Wiley, and I learned that very quickly after I got over that fear. The other thing that helped was that whenever Ivo needed to bitch, I was there. If I ever needed to bitch, Ivo was there. And we were both working. I feel very lucky. My first book was a co-writing effort. The writing guides that I collaborated with, they were all collaborations. And then the thing I did with Ivo was a collaboration. And all of my collaborations have been working out really, really well. But I must admit, it was fun, but it was also one of the most professional relationships I've had with another writer, because when Ivo corrected me, he always backed it up with fact.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he kept me honest, and I kept him honest. And everything worked out great. But I knew how much fun we were having when we were writing this book. And I made a joke in one of the passages about, I was talking about finding your voice, you know, presenting an original podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I was saying, you know, if you want to be the first person to do the official curling podcast, do it. Because right now there's nothing like that in the podcast, in the podosphere. And Ivo looked up at me, and this was, and I wrote that passage in June, and I had done a search. I had done a search on Podcast Alley. There were no curling podcasts. And Ivo looked up at me, and he said, "Have you done a search lately?"
Oh, no.
And I said, "Ivo, it's curling, come on." And we both looked at each other, and silently, we just got up, went to a computer, did a search.
And there it was.
Two of them. Two curling podcasts. I was stunned. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!" So, but that was how much fun we were having. You know, we were scrambling. We were scrambling like maniacs, and giving ourselves a stopping point when all the stuff with the iTunes hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
And now because of the second printing, we're getting a chance to go back and correct some of the stuff that we might have rushed through or we want to change, because that's the thing about podcasting. It is so. It's been ever since Steve Jobs, you know, gave Adam Curry the nod.
Mm-hmm.
We have been scrambling to try to keep everything current.
Oh yeah, and, good luck.
Yeah, no, and you can't. I mean, right now, one of the things that I'm starting to find more and more fascination about is something called enhanced podcasting. And I describe enhanced podcasting to people as the happy medium between vidcasting and podcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say that I'm kind of snickering at the videocasting people. And you guys know what I'm talking about because we're all in the same Yahoo podcasters group. I really had to bite my tongue and pull back away from the list when people were making these posts on, I just finished my 30-minute video cast, and it's 100-something megabytes. What do I do? And I wanted to write back, make a shorter cast, because it's video, Sparky. It's video. I've worked with digital video since Premiere version 4.2. You know, this was in the 90s when I bought for $1,200, I bought a 9-gigabyte drive. And I remember a friend of mine said to me, what are you going to do with 9 gigabytes of memory, man?
You never use that much.
Exactly. And I just looked at the guy and I said, you've never worked with digital video. The thing I like about enhanced podcasting is that, yeah, they're bigger than the average podcast, but you get some of the neat things that vidcasts offer. You know, you've got hyperlinks, you've got the still images. It's really cool. And unfortunately, we didn't have a place to put that in this book.
You're right.
However, if a second edition comes out, I guarantee you there's going to be something in there on enhanced podcasting.
You know, sure. What's funny about this book is, this is the first book that I've ever read where I've heard both authors first. So as I'm reading through this, the voices actually switch while I'm writing. I can tell what parts Evil wrote and what parts you wrote. And it switches voice.
Now that could be actually a fun contest. Who wrote this section?
Just highlight the book in yellow or green or something.
There you go. You know, who wrote this? Who wrote the following phrase? Da 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 da. You know. But that's and you know that I think shows you kind of the synergy of me and Evo is that you can read it and you know Chuck, you've heard both of us, so mm-hmm. You kind of know the different voices, but you got to admit our styles are almost identical.
There were some gray areas where I can't tell.
Right, and that to me is the sign of two really. Really good friends and really good writers sitting down and talking about the same thing with the same passion and the same voice, mm-hmm. regardless of whatever voice you may hear, the passion is always there, and that's something that I can honestly say. Apart from my fiction, this is the most passionate thing I think I've ever written.
Well, let me ask you a question with the Dummy series. Did they give you a guideline or guide you in a direction? Because all the books, you know, have kind of a similar feel a little bit to them, you know, across the board.
They have very specific styles on how to do things. And they even sent us other For Dummies books related to what we were doing as guidelines. And that was that was extremely helpful. And you know, some For Dummies books are more flippant than others. Some For Dummies books are more technical than others. I mean, that's what Eva and I were trying to do. We were trying to find the fine line between both. But the For Dummies people were very, very specific on what they wanted from us. And they also leaned on us if we went into a direction that the Dummies folks didn't want us to go into. One passage in particular, I was talking about the different types of podcasts that you could do. I'm sorry, different types of radio shows you can listen to. And I listed, I was talking about the evolution of talk radio and how there were some people that do it specifically for entertainment. I mentioned Don and Mike and Ron and Fez. I talked about talk radio shows that went into politics with Rush Limbaugh on the right and Al Franken mm-hmm. on the left channel. And mm-hmm. then I had this phrase where I said, and then you have those bottom feeders. And in parentheses, I put Bill O'Reilly and Opie and Anthony. and they sent me back
a That'll leave a mark.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. We don't want to alienate our readers. And I go, no, but I want to alienate those guys.
Yeah.
Because at the time, Opie and Anthony were still in the air here in Washington, D.C., and I'll never forget it. I was actually writing, and sometimes when I write, I have the radio going in the background. And this was, again, this is before I got into podcasting, I had forgotten to change the station, and Opie and Anthony came on, and I reached for the button to change it, and then that was when the whole thing in the
church.
Yeah. I heard it all go down, and I am laughing like a hyena, not because I think this is the funny radio, but that I am listening to this, to the very last show ever produced by Ron and Fez, produced by Opie and Anthony for WJFK. And I was like, oh, how awkward is this going to be? And it got so awkward I had to turn it off. I mean, I could just feel the tension rising every time those guys opened their mouths, and I said, yeah, these guys are done. But Wiley has very specific rules. You know, you can't dog on too many people. You can't do this. You can't. But then the great thing about writing for Dummies is you can use as many pop culture references as you.
Oh yes, those were plenty.
One of my favorites. And Evo and I are like the masters of pop culture references. And one of my favorites that made it in the book, I was so tickled that it made it in the book, I was talking about when do you make an investment in your recording equipment. And I always go back to the opening scene of the Blues Brothers.
Uh-huh.
When he goes, where's the caddy? The Bluesmobile. I traded it
for a microphone.
You traded the Bluesmobile for a microphone? Okay, I can see that. You know, I mean, it's such great comedy. But it was so appropriate for talking about podcasting. Because, you know, you hear people go, you spent how, you know, I mean, when you look at the pictures of Mike Menengay's setup at Draco Vista Studios, and you go, and you're not making any money off? Well, you know, I can see this. This makes sense.
I love how you justified it, too.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
The guy next door, he's got two jet skis. Does he make any money off his jet skis? No. Hey, honey, I need about $5,000.
Exactly. You know what I mean? No. In fact, when I invested in my own modest setup, I invested maybe $400 or $500. And I still get a very nice quality sound. When the podcast started getting international responses, and then when I got this gig with Podcasting for Dummies, and the way the podcast was stimulating sales for both Moravi and Legacy of Moravi, my wife turned to me one day, just completely after I was telling her about you know how things were going with Podcasting for Dummies. Got real quiet in the car, and then my wife turned to me and she said, I really was hoping that this podcasting thing was going to be something where I could say, I told you so. But I can't do that. So yeah. I'm glad it's working out for you. And she said in such a begrudging tone, I said, that hurt. I said, that hurt, didn't it? She was like, you have no idea.
Well, at least you didn't jump up and say, I told you so.
No, exactly. My wife also studies Taekwondo. She would kick my ass in a heartbeat. So
I told you.
I told you so.
Flying fist of death. So.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and whenever I'm in podcast land, I listen to Chuck Chat.
Well, tell us about your first Mac.
Oh man! Climb into the Wayback Machine.
I'm all about the Wayback Machine.
Yeah. It's 1990.
Okay, Sherman.
I am not even in the United States. I'm in England, and at the Madison House, which is JMU's youth hostel over there. They had just acquired a Fat Mac, one of those neat little itty-bitty Fat Macs, and I sat behind one of those for the first time, and I fell in love with it. And I was writing a production. Excuse me, I was writing a report on a play I had just seen called, the play was called Bent. And it was starring a guy that I knew, but nobody in America knew at that time. The actor was Ian McKellen.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, when you mention Ian McKellen now, Ian McKellen. I knew about Ian McKellen in the freaking 80s. If you want to see a young Ian McKellen in just see how good he has always been, you can actually pick up the DVD now of The Scarlet Pimpernel with Ian McKellen, Jane Seymour, and Anthony Andrews. And Ian McKellen is the villain, and he is so good as a villain. But anyway, that's for a different show altogether. So that was my first Mac. It was a little itty bitty fat Mac. And for years, I kept telling my folks, we need to get a Mac. We need to get a Mac. And my dad got burned on the Apple IIe, and I loved the Apple, but he didn't. And instead, he went PC after that. So for the longest time, I wanted a Mac, and I finally got my first ever Mac was a Power Mac 7100, and
that's not too shabby.
I got it on a clearance sale. And it wasn't bad. Power Mac 7100 was a nice starting machine. Outgrew it very quickly. Upgraded to a 7200, and that was the one where I first edited video on it. And I did a lot of things on my Mac, but when I was editing video, that was when my parents and my brother backed off on calling me a Mac hack. And they actually were like, "Wow, he knows what he's doing." I mean, I'm a hardcore Mac user, but I'm not one of these Mac users that completely dismisses the PC. You know, we all need doorstops, we all need paperweights. So I mean, I think they serve a purpose.
But, there's a place for them in this world.
Yeah.
Well said.
but no, seriously. I mean, I teach applications on both platforms, on Macs and PCs. And one of the things that I really truly love about podcasting is that podcasting, it doesn't matter what platform you're on.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think that's one of the major strengths of podcasting.
All our bits have the same color.
Exactly. we're just one, you know, shiny happy people, as REM would tell us. No wait, was that REM? Shiny happy people.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
Go ahead with your next one, Craig.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I'm not really a Scotch guy, but that's okay. Neither here nor there, but I saw that you love cigars, and we had talked to this a little bit offline, but tell us, how'd you get into cigars, and what's some cigars that you actually like?
Oh, wow, Cigar Cast. it's called Technorama, right? Technorama.
Yeah. Okay. It's now Smoke-norama.
See, here I was trying to get all my geeky, you know, tech notes all together and stuff like that so that I wouldn't sound like a total hack.
You thought you were going to throw us a curve.
That's true.
Okay. The night is young.
That's true. The night is young. So anyway, all right. You all probably also saw on my website that I clocked in some time as a professional actor. And I still consider myself a professional actor. It's just that my writing has now really kind of taken the forefront. With my acting career, I spent 7 terrific seasons at the Maryland Renaissance Festival. And at the Maryland Fair, after hours, you know, we'd kick back, and some guys were smoking cigars. Now, I'm not a smoker. I've never been a smoker. I tried it once, and you know, I just remember I could smell my clothes, you know, from across the room. I was smoking, so I said, you know, this just isn't for me. Well, a friend of mine at the Ren Fair one night at a party offered me a cigar, and I thought, well, at worst it'll keep the gnats away. And I took a puff and I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. And it was called a Denver Select. It was like it's not Pabst Blue Ribbon, but it's not Guinness either. Okay, it's kind of like a Budweiser, you know, if you put it in beer terms. So that wasn't a bad smoke. And then in the picture that you see, that was when I really got into cigars. My best friend Orion is in that shot. He introduced me to a cigar called the Ava, and that's when I started getting real serious about the cigars.
Oh yeah.
Wait, which picture are you looking at? I'm looking at one with a girl in a bikini.
Oh, that's the one where you have to, you know, you have to charge like, I charge like $19.95.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute, what?
Oh, wrong website, sorry.
Wrong website. Yeah. I didn't inhale. But anyway, so the Ava was my first, what I consider my first real cigar. But out of all the different stogies that I've had the pleasure and displeasure of smoking, I still think my favorite, I'm still partial to the Avos, especially the Ava Maduro is very, very smooth, and so is the Ava Pyramid. Now, in Canada, they don't have the same embargo issues that we do. And in Canada...
I know where this is going.
Yes. The Cuban Arturo Fuentes that are Churchill's, that to me is the that's the ultimate smoke. And what I love about cigars is that when I go out on the deck and I smoke a cigar and I have a scotch, I'm guaranteed anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half where I'm in my own zone, and I'm absolutely positively relaxing.
Oh, I know that feeling. I know that intimately. I love that feeling too.
And this is why I think cigars are better than cigarettes, because you know how people say, well, I'm going to go out for a quick smoke break. You don't do that with a cigar.
Yeah. It's an investment.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, is you've never heard of anybody dying by chain-smoking cigars. But it is, I mean, if you were to try to chain-smoke cigars, yeah, you'd be dead within a matter of hours as opposed to a matter of decades.
I've inhaled a cigar a little bit one time, and it's not fun.
No, it's not. It really isn't. You know, cigars are meant to be savored, but not inhaled. You know, those are the smokes that I enjoy the most. My Avos and my Arturo Fuentes, even the Dominican Republic Arturo Fuentes, they're still extremely good smokes.
Awesome.
Nothing tastes as rich and bold as El Ropo.
Oh dear. You know, as I like to have said though, when I had my first Cuban cigar, someone said, better than sex, huh? And I looked at him and I said, no, but awful damn close.
Yes, awful close, yes. Well, you know,
you can get a cigar more often.
That's true, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're paying for.
Okay,
our G rating.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to Mexico, and I had some Cohibas down there. Those were pretty good.
Yeah, my problem with Cohibas is that they're too spicy. I've smoked them, and I'm like, they're okay. I don't think they're worth all the hype. I feel the same way about punches too. Not a big fan of the punch.
Well, you know, as far as to be honest with you, as far as I go concerned, you know, the few Cubans I've had, not just Cohiba, but it's like, I don't know. There are so many other good ones out there now. You can smoke and not really miss anything.
That's true, but I think it's kind of a mental thing too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think when you get a Cuban, it's that whole mystique. You know, it's a Cuban. You know, I could get busted for this. Whoa! You know? when actually, yeah, you can get busted at the line if you're bringing like 500 Cubans back from, you know, from Canada over to the United States. But if you're bringing 10 or 20, now if you're bringing that kind of tobacco across the state line, that's a little different. But if you're bringing 10 or 20 Cubans across the state lines, I mean across Canada, no big deal. You know, it's 10 or 20. You know, no big deal. Mm-hmm. So I do think that it's kind of the mystique that you're having a Cuban cigar
and a trailer load of firecrackers.
Exactly. There you go.
That's right. Well, can you give us a little bit of insight on your graphic artist? And I know you said you alluded to doing video editing too.
Yeah, I was trying very, very hard in the end. in the early 90s to get a freelance graphic art and then eventually website design career off the ground. Mm-hmm. And where I really hit gold was not in the amount of graphic art and website design that I did, but in the amount of teaching gigs. People were hiring me to come in and teach people how to build websites.
Really?
Using Dreamweaver. Yeah, exactly. And what I find funny about that is that, you know, I've gotten a lot of compliments about my own website, about my writer's website, that's really well put together, very well laid out, very easily navigated, which I appreciate. And they go, could you do something like that for me? And I go, sure. I then show them how much it would cost. And they balk at that. They go, okay. But then if I tell them, but, you know, for this much, I can go ahead and teach you how to do it. And more people have wanted me to come in and teach them how to do certain things. And for a while, I also got into video editing, and now I'm teaching people how to edit video using Adobe Premiere. Mm-hmm. the thing is that I can't edit video as much because, again, that's another real time-consuming deal.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's addictive, though. It's like podcasting. It's like crack. Only it's like crack, only worse.
I mean,
you can sink so much time into producing a podcast. You can sink so much time into doing a video edit that it boggles the mind. That's one of the reasons why I'm really staying clear of vidcasting right now, because I know that if I got into vidcasting, my wife would never see me, and it would just be really, really bad.
yeah. And I know that feeling. And, you know, I taught myself Premiere, and it's not a trivial program at first.
Not at all, no.
No.
And the thing is that, again, this is why I don't completely poo-poo PCs, because I have to know my way around a PC, because that's all the Premiere runs on now.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was that I was one of those guys that made the jump to Apple's Final Cut, and I have no regrets. I've been very happy in Final Cut world. So, but still, it's a very time consuming endeavor. But whenever I do edit video, I'm always very proud of how it looks and how it turns out.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
As a matter of fact, next week I'm going to be teaching, as far as we know, it's the first course of its kind, at least on the East Coast, if not in the country. But where I work at EEI Communications here in Alexandria, Virginia, and Silver Spring, Maryland, we're offering a course in podcasting for corporate business and government.
Oh, neat.
And the textbook is, shocker this, Podcasting for Dummies. And but really the thing that, and this was where I really felt like I knew that we had tapped onto something. We offered this up as a seminar, a free seminar. I was supposed to give a 3-hour free seminar about what exactly podcasting is. I was like, okay. And they told me, expect maybe 10 to 15 people to show up at a seminar like this. We usually get a full house of 30 people if it's something like Photoshop or InDesign or Illustrator, and we're giving free lessons on that. I said, okay, no problem. Well, they had 60 people call in saying they were interested in the seminar.
Hmm.
60. And they said, well, yeah, that's usually how it goes. You'll probably get, 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, no problem, 20 people. Still, that's not bad. We had a count of 36 people show up for this podcasting seminar. Most of them, well, not most of them, some of them were already podcasting. But to give you an idea of the interest in podcasting, I had people from the German embassy there, from from NOAA, the National Observatory for Weather.
Mm-hmm.
They were there. I had people from the Kennedy Center there, from NASA there, and
cool.
they all wanted to know about podcasting. Well, the guy who's in charge of EEI's class schedules, he was so taken by the turnout. He said, we're supposed to be teaching this course in February. Then he looked at me for 1 second, he turned back around, and he goes, but we decided we're going to teach it in December. And
ooh.
I said, I said, we are? And yeah, so next week, I'm going to be teaching this course in podcasting for government and corporate business.
Hey, that's cool.
I'm really excited about it. I mean, it's going to probably be, it's going to probably be 70-80% talking about podcasting and 20% of, okay, now here's how we make it work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very excited about that. And there have been a lot of people talking about coming out to the Apple store at Tyson's Corner, which is happening this Saturday, December 10th. I'm going to be there, and they want me to do a one-hour seminar on podcasting. So, again, you know, it really is amazing how quickly everything's been taking off.
Mm-hmm.
With podcasting. And I just sincerely hope that in the second printing and, you know, God willing, the third printing, you know, we can just keep it going, because the more books sell, the happier I am, and the happier Evo is too.
Oh, sure. I mean, you want to keep Evo happy.
Yeah, when you keep Evo happy, the world rests easier.
That's right.
You don't want to make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Oh God, what an awful movie! I kept sitting there thinking, the guy who directed Crouching Tiger directed this. Oh man, just a train wreck. A train wreck.
What else is in the works for T. Morris coming up in the future?
Well,
can you check his schedule for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm going to take a very well-deserved nap. That's one thing I think I should do. But actually, I started up a brand new podcast in October, and it's been getting some really positive feedback. It's called The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. But actually, I'm finding out that a lot of the people that are listening aren't writers of fantasy. Some of these people are just writers of romance, of chick lit, of all kinds of different genres, and they're getting something out of it. And then there are just fans, just people that have no desire to go into writing. They're just people who just enjoy writing, you know, podcasts about writing. And what I do, which is different from what Merle Lafferty does and what Mike Stackpole does, is that I go into the marketing aspect of books. I go into stuff that authors are not given any kind of arsenal whatsoever. Basically, when you write your first book, it lands on your doorstep, and they basically say, okay, there it is, and that's it. And a majority of authors are left to fend for themselves. They're not given any kind of tips on how to market their books and how to market themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of put it in perspective, last year, 2004, 170,000 books were published in 1 year.
Wow.
That's 170,000 books. Now, out of those 170,000 books, I had two that were published. And I want you, out of all those books, to buy only two books, my books. And that's what The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy is all about. It's a podcast about marketing your books and marketing yourself. And I mean, don't get me wrong, Wiley Press has done more for Podcasting for Dummies than any other publisher. I mean, I got a shirt, I got free the handouts that you see, the little booklets.
Yep, yep.
Now, if I wanted to do that with my fiction, I'd have to do that. Wiley covered the cost on that.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was really, really nice. Whereas if it were... and they also did, you know, promotional postcards, all that kind of stuff. Now, my fiction publisher, Dragonman Press, when she has it in her budget, she makes me bookmarks, and she makes me postcards, and that's great too. But there's only so much a publisher can do. And what you need to do as a new author is get out there and put in the face time. And a lot of new authors don't want to do that. But unfortunately, that is the way the business works now. Without face time, people aren't really going to buy your books. And then you've got, let's see, what have I got in the works for 2006? Well, right now I'm working with Evo and another guy named Chris Miller. We're doing patiobooks.com. And that's been a huge success. We've got over 11 novels currently being podcast, 11 titles being podcast right now, and we have over 40 in production.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're doing this
40. Wait a minute. You said 40?
40.
40.
40.
Wow.
And now to get from production to actual on the feed, we kind of give you the litmus test where you have to first meet our specs, and then once you meet our audio specs, then you give us 5 chapters up front. Once you give us the 5 chapters up front, then boom, you're off. You're hitting the ground and running. And you'd be surprised how many authors out there are still trying to get a hang of the specs. The authors who get the hang of the specs and, you know, meet all our requirements and do everything that we ask you to do, they get turned live. But the fact that we've only been online for a few months and we already have 40 people that are they're working on getting the patio book up to speed and up to snuff and recording, that's great. I mean, we couldn't be happier. And this all started when I, you know, first came on the scene with Moravi, and then Mark Jeffrey came on with Pocket Independent, and then Scott Sigler came on with Earthcore. We were the three musketeers of patio books. And so I'll be working with patiobooks.com all the way through 2006. And right now I'm currently working on the next Billabob Battings mystery, which is called, it's right now the working title is called Billabob Battings in the Case of the Pitcher's Pendant. And from there we'll see if it works out. When is it going to be out in 2006? I don't know. I'm not going to make that kind of commitment. I have a 17-month-old daughter. I take everything one step at a time.
Oh yes.
Keep the priorities.
Yes.
Thanks again for joining us, and good luck with the book sales, T.
Thank you very much. I hope to hear from some of your listeners in the future.
You can find out more about Technorama at www.chuckchat.com. News, reviews, and more interviews at chuckchat.com. Feed your inner geek twice a week with Technorama. Thanks for listening, and a binary high five. 101.